This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on the show today. This half hour being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. And again, your ability to get ready for the tailgate and the whiteout is at hand. Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We bring in now Neil Coulong, the great man himself, who was a staple of this show and has been since day one. And the reason he's still here, because every day he gets better. Neil, thanks so much.
As always, my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So the Steelers have been aching to get a wide receiver. There have been a lot of rumors over the last few months as they're targeting this guy, they're targeting that guy. Well, they got Mike Williams from the Jets. What's your thought on what he potentially can add to this lineup?
Well, they were targeting this guy and that guy, and they got a guy. I'm not entirely sure how much you can expect Williams to really contribute. He didn't do a whole lot in New York, and I understand there are fluctuations in the president of everything in New York Jets. Aaron Rodgers says he doesn't like him. He's probably not going to play a whole lot. But looking at Williams, watching him play, he doesn't look right. If you were familiar with him back when he was with the Chargers and he was competitive, he's a good player. Yeah. He's a good long ball receiver. He's got good deep speed. He's a good big body down there. He's clearly not 100% coming off of post-ACL repair surgery this offseason. I don't think he's there yet. And because of that, I'm not entirely sure this move isn't more geared toward next season. And what I mean by that is you get him for half the year. He was not their first choice. I don't know, he might not have even been their fifth choice. They went after several receivers in free agency as well as in the trade market up until the deadline, 4 p.m. Eastern today. They land Williams. Presumably, he's the only one they actually could get. And I think looking at Williams, my observations, because of the health issue, I don't think that he's fully there yet. I think you get nine games with him to kind of see who he can be, and you get control over him up until the start of free agency. You have the ability to give him an extension, probably get him on the cheap because he's in there. They know about him. It's a good spot for him. They're going to give him an opportunity. He could certainly go explore free agency again if he wants to do that. But I would think if the Steelers gave him a two-year deal, he'd probably want to do that, stay in one place and try to continue to work his way back to where he was prior to his injury. And with that, I think the Steelers have a strategic move in place, ironically, to not be in the spot where they have to trade for Mike Williams in the offseason next year. The best they could get on the market was Van Jefferson this past year. Clearly, that's not really making a whole lot of hay. Really just kind of a guy status as well. He's not doing much exceptional work. The Roman Wilson draft pick, we're barely even remembering that he was drafted at this point.
Sure.
He was hurt throughout camp. He's got a long way to go before he can really establish himself into something, and Steelers fans should know that because this is exactly what happened to Calvin Austin. And Calvin Austin has two games, and everybody thinks that he's a great receiver. He hasn't really done anything up to this point. So if it's going to take that long to get a return on investment on a third round pick, it's not all that great of a pick. So I think Williams gives them some assurance going into next season. And worst case, if he doesn't work out, this is the big thing to remember. I find this fascinating, and I'm not sure if anybody else cares, but the Steelers hate drafting in the fifth round. The last player they drafted in the fifth round, they traded back into the fifth round to acquire Isaiah Loudermilk out of Wisconsin, who's been, you know, kind of a marginal player, but somebody they bet on. He had upside. I remember watching him play. Did a few things here and there. Nothing outstanding. The last time they used their fifth-round pick in the draft was 2019, and they took Zach Gentry. They trade their fifth-round pick every year. So, to me, it really suggests there's some type of formula that they have that they believe in that says there's just not a great return on investment drafting in the fifth round. And you can see, potentially, you know, if they feel fifth-round picks don't tend to be any better than sixth-round picks, but you have to pay fifth-round picks a lot more, it would make sense that you'd prefer to load up on sixth-round picks, which they do quite a bit over the line. This is Colbert and Kahn. They've done that often. If you feel, though, that that's the case, then, yeah, get rid of your fifth-round picks like they're on fire, which is what they do every year. So I don't think the value of a fifth-round pick is very much. And Mike Williams doesn't have a whole lot left on his contract. The Steelers are picking all that up, apparently, the report that I saw. So I don't think it's a terrible move, but I really don't think it's one that is that should be seen as one looking to produce a pretty big return immediately. I'm not sure if Williams is there as a player. I hope I'm wrong for Mike Williams' sake, but from what I saw, I'm not sure how effective he can really be for the remainder of this season.
When they acquired Van Jefferson, I thought, you know what, not a bad player. Not awesome and incredible. He's not going to throw you over the top. But I always felt with the Rams, he was a fairly dependable player. How's he been with the Steelers, in your opinion?
I think you have. He's playing the position. Choosing my words carefully here. I don't want to flood your station with angry Justin Fields fans, but he's playing the position for the Steelers that requires probably the best quarterback play. That X receiver spot, moving around. There's a fluidity to it. You're not you are running routes, but you have concepts in mind. There are places you need to go based on coverage. I don't know if Fields saw that particularly well with Jefferson, and his targets kind of speak to that. I think he only had four targets in the first six games, something like that. He had probably three times that in two games with Russell Wilson, and he produced a little bit. You saw a little bit more why they signed him. But let's be fair. I mean, this is, in some ways, it's a different offense, but in some ways, he's replacing Deontay Johnson's spot on the field. And Deontay Johnson got 8-9 targets a game for right. 3 years with the Steelers. That's a lot of production. I don't think anybody expected Van Jefferson to get that, but with a better passing quarterback, we're starting to see more now of what Arthur Smith envisioned this offense was going to be. And that's a good thing for Jefferson. And I'll say this. Jefferson, coming out, I really like Jefferson. I thought he had his Steelers receiver all over him. Very balanced. He's got good footwork. He knows how to read coverage. He's a smart player. The Steelers like those kinds of receivers, and they draft them often. They didn't get Jefferson. I feel like there was a reason back then. I don't remember what it was, but your typical Steelers third, fourth round draft pick type of guy. It didn't work out there. He did some things with the Rams. He wasn't a great player. I'm not surprised he's still in the league, and I think he'll be in the league next year as well, but not going to be a chart-topping type of guy. To have Arthur Smith's offense, which is tight end-oriented, they tend to make the bigger plays. Having that underneath receiver, it might not be as valuable a commodity overall, but this is a team that really is wide open at the receiver position. Anybody want to step up and get open, they're going to get the ball. And now you have a quarterback that's able to do that. You're seeing Jefferson add a little bit more, in my opinion. Now, is he going to catch 60 passes over the second half of the year? I wouldn't think so. But to do a thing here and there, similarly to Williams, I'm not saying that he's not going to do anything, but I don't think either of them are going to be game-to-game dominant It's not going to, you know, really boost the position, which fairly is one of the thinnest in the NFL. But he does bring something to the table. We'll see what he does. He's getting a lot more opportunity with Wilson. I think that's because Wilson sees him, and they're on more in a connection than perhaps Jefferson and Fields were.
Do you have a different view of Arthur Smith as a play caller for Russell Wilson as opposed to Justin Fields?
That's a good question. I don't know if I do, to be honest. I don't think Smith was running much complexity for either of them. I will say they have more opportunity. They're sustaining drives longer, and with that, you see more. Now, in that regard, you could say he's getting more out of Russell Wilson. They're doing more. They have the opportunity to do more because Wilson's having more success overall than Fields was. On a down-to-down basis, Wilson's moving the chains. He's completing more passes. They're scoring more. We've seen that. And they're doing more overall in the offense. So I think Smith has more of a chance to do more things. But I don't know how deep they've really gotten. And I think some of that is I don't think there's a chunk of it that I don't think has anything to do with the quarterback. I think it has a lot to do with the offensive line. Right. You spent a chunk of time there without Isaac Seumalo. You lost Dan Moore here recently as well. Broderick Jones has not exactly been stellar to this point, to put it mildly. You had a rookie going into the season at center, and you lost James Daniels pretty quickly into the season. You had another rookie at right guard. I think because of that, things had to be a little bit more simplified. At the same time, I think that's why you're seeing the Steelers' run offense get a little bit better per carry than what it was. You're getting better play out of younger players, which keep in mind, too, I mean, Frazier went down to have McCollum in there as well. They've had to dig deep into their depth at offensive line. So with that, I don't know how much complexity there can be. But on the surface, and to answer your question, I don't think it's any more complex for Russ. I think Russ is doing more with what's there on a per-throw basis. I don't want to act like Justin Fields didn't do anything, but to me, through two games of Wilson with six of Fields, it's pretty obvious that Wilson's a much better quarterback. Play to play, he just has a much better handle of what's going on. He sees the field better. And he gets the ball to open receivers more often. Fields did pretty well with what he was asked to do, but he didn't do a whole lot. So it's not a question of complexity. I think it's really just Wilson's the veteran quarterback with good vision, good eyesight, and he delivers an accurate pass to an open receiver. It's pretty simple when you look at it that way, but Wilson definitely has more of a command of what's going on out there.
What has impressed you about the Steeler defense to this point? What has given you pause?
The run defense is a concern, and they put a lot into their run defense this offseason. You extended Cam Hayward, in my opinion, something they should have done, but a large part of it was there was nobody even close to able to provide the level of run support that he does. That's a big component in what you're doing. You're seeing great play out of Keanu Benton, a young player that they're going to count on in years to come. He's going to be a core player for them. Defensively, you invested a lot of money in a linebacker. We've talked about this for years. I don't know how many linebackers they've gone through trying to replace Ryan Shazier, but Queen is the next one in line. I'm not sure how good Queen has been. So it's there are issues there that should bother anybody for the amount of investment that they've put into this. You can't let teams run down your throat the way that we've seen them, especially not when maybe the best team in the AFC runs the ball at a prolific rate and they're in your division. You got two games against them with nine to play. So Baltimore is not an easy team to stop for anybody. They're going to struggle the way that we have seen them play run defense to this point. What I like about them is they have T.J. Watt. I know that's pretty simple, but I don't think there is a superlative that you can put on his game that hasn't been said at this point. But as an observer watching the last 7 years, I think it really says something late in a close game when you just know T.J. Watt's going to do something, and that's not fan speak, you're sitting and waiting because that's usually what happens. How many defensive players have we ever seen that you know will make a play when the game is on the line? We say that about quarterbacks. We say that about wide receivers. You know, way back in the day, that the AFC Championship game at Three Rivers Stadium, John Elway drops back to pass and throws a 95-mile-an-hour fastball that drills Shannon Sharpe square in the chest to clinch the game and send the Broncos to the Super Bowl. Those are two guys you knew were going to make a play because mm-hmm. they did. They're Hall of Fame players for a reason. T.J. Watt's on defense, reacting to what's going on, and he still makes a play. The ball pops out of the guy's hands when T.J. Watt hits him late in close games. Nobody else is like that. It's really a remarkable thing to watch. I've thoroughly enjoyed being able to see him throughout his career. And I've said not to write him off, but, you know, most guys, they start slowing down as a pass rusher. I think Watt might be better. I think he has more – the explosion probably goes down, but – you watch the array of moves that he has, the way that he sets tackles up. He's such a smart player. He is so far ahead of the guys that he's going against. It's like he just needs reps. He just needs the opportunity to see how they're going to block him. And by the end of the game, he's got four or five things he's going to do that they don't see coming. And he kills them every time. Just a phenomenal player. And if it needs to be said, he's his first ballot Hall of Fame guy. Very likely could become this year the first player, I believe, in voting history for the Defensive Player of the Year award to get first place votes in five consecutive seasons. His brother didn't even do that. Aaron Donald didn't even do that. That speaks hugely to his ability, to his intelligence, to his growth in the game, and his health. You know, that's probably the biggest thing. His brother, you know, unfortunately took a lot of injuries right probably at the height of his veteran prime. He probably had another Defensive Player of the Year in him, if not for injuries. And Watt has been fortunate enough to avoid a lot of that, high-end injuries to this point. And the Steelers, over the last 6 years, have probably won 15 games that they shouldn't have because of T.J. Watt. And I don't think any defensive player could say that.
You can only play who you play. How much of the 6-2 record is a result of the schedule, and what's your view of the schedule here as they make the turn into the second half?
You're right. They only can play who they play. I just watched the Colts on Monday night or on Sunday night against the Vikings, and I'm not sure they're making the right move with the quarterback that they have.
Right.
Not look like I thought that he would. He didn't look like how he played against the Steelers. I'm not sure what happened to him there, but Steelers probably should have won that game. Probably should have beat Dallas, too. So you're looking at a team that, in essence, fell a little bit short, but won six games otherwise and were very competitive in the two losses that they have. So you might have beaten teams that are not, you know, overall the best in the NFL, but that's what you need to do. You have to beat the teams that you need to beat. They earned their record. I think it's a fair representation of where they are. Excuse me. I don't think, though, they're going to win six or seven games down the stretch. Much better opponents. You know, I didn't get a chance to really watch Cleveland a whole lot, but I would think any team would improve if you took a player that's performing like Deshaun Watson was off of it. I would think that'd be more tough, and they are clearly the worst team they're going to play. Mm-hmm. Cincinnati is a much better team than 3-5 or whatever they are right now. Like I said, Baltimore might be the best team in the game. They've got them twice. If they're not the best team in the game, then it's the Chiefs, and they got to play the Chiefs. So it's pretty brutal, you know. I think to get ahead of ourselves and act as if they're just going to show up and win six games over their last nine, it obviously is silly. This is a 9-win team. Maybe they eke out 10. I might see them fall to 8. But I think they can compete. I don't think that Cincinnati is light years ahead of them. Baltimore forgot how to beat Pittsburgh. I'm not sure how that's happened, but that probably comes even this year. We'll see. But Cleveland's a team they could beat twice, I would imagine. Not the easiest thing in the world to do, but you win 3 of 4 against Cleveland and Cincinnati. Maybe you take one off Baltimore. You're in a pretty good spot. So I think we'll definitely see the toughest part of their season. We're going to see probably their worst game in these next 9, somewhere in there, starting with the Commanders. I didn't even mention them. What a story that is. What great play, you know, Dan Quinn's gotten them. The level that they're at, Jaden Daniels is clearly the rookie of the year. I think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the game this season. Not going to be an easy team to beat. We will see truly who the Steelers are, but I also think that this is a team that's built for the game of attrition, like Mike Tomlin often says. So you got some tough battles in there. I think they'll compete, but I think 9 wins is realistic. You know, they go 3-6 here down the stretch. It seems like a collapse, but their schedule is really, really cold and then hot. I mean, they didn't get anybody in the first part of the year. The bulk of their competition is down the stretch here. So we'll find out more about them. I mean, it's a fun team to watch. It's fun to see them grow, especially offensively. But you got some really good football teams coming up. I'm not overly optimistic in their chances to win, you know, 5 of their last 9.
Always a pleasure, my good friend.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Neil Kulong. We'll come back more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you and thank you for your years of patronage.